The Touching the Trail Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Touching the Trail Podcast, our weekly ritual of peace, presence, and perseverance. This week's episode is episode 177 with a returning guest, JB Benna. And before we jump into my discussion with JB today, I just want to take care of a little business. Now, there are two ways that you can support Touching the Trail. The first is that you can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And the second way is that you can go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Now, these are handheld deep tissue massage tools, and both those links are in the show notes. Now, I apologize for the late episode this week. Typically, I will release episodes on Mondays or on Tuesdays, and I know it is Friday, but I really wanted to release this interview this week, and we did not record it until Friday due to some unforeseen circumstances, and so I figured that it was worth the wait, because I knew this would be a quite compelling discussion, and it was. Now, if you saw on Instagram, I went to the Born to Run Ultra Marathon Extravaganza last weekend, which I also attended last year. It is a wild, wild time. It is an absolute adventure, and it is insane, but it's awesome, and I love it. And I will definitely tell that whole story in an upcoming special episode of the podcast, so you can look forward to that. But today, I am talking with JB Benna, and the last time he was on this podcast was on episode 65, so quite a long time ago. But he has returned, and we had, like I said, a very wide-ranging, compelling, and interesting discussion, as is typical on this podcast. Now, JB Benna is the founder of Journey Film, so that means he's the creator of such classic ultra-running films like Unbreakable and The Long Haul. I love these movies, and I've loved JB's work for quite a while. We haven't spoken in a long time. Honestly, we probably haven't spoken since the last time we talked on this podcast, other than on email or things like that. So it was good to catch up. And today we are specifically talking about the intersection of ultra running and Christianity / spirituality. So for some of you, I know you might be a little put off by that topic, but I hope that going into today's episode, you can keep an open mind and you can look at this as yet another perspective on how ultra running shapes our lives and how having a faith, having a spirituality with whatever specific institution you associate with, or maybe one that you don't specifically, having a deeper spirituality is a beneficial thing and something that has positively shaped JB's life and positively shaped mine. And our journeys have been different in that sense. I would definitely say we associate and identify with and are fulfilled by different forms of faith and spirituality. They're not all that different. And really, all of them in this world aren't that different. And we talk about that today as well. So I truly hope that you enjoy today's conversation as I talk with my friend, JB Benna.
It's good to be back with you, Jared. Thank you for having me and taking time. Yeah, lots happened since I last spoke with you. I can't even remember when that was. It was probably, I don't know, 2016, I'm guessing.
Probably. Probably 2016. That sounds about right. I can't even remember either.
Yeah, I can't remember. But yeah, you know, we were at that time just kind of getting back from our trip to Alaska, where we had spent 4 or 5 months with the kids, kind of decompressing, exploring, running, and trying to kind of decide what we're going to do with our life moving forward. Because just prior to heading to Alaska, my daughter had some major health issues and nearly died. And then my brother-in-law passed away in an overdose. And then we had got wrapped up in a kind of a criminal trial related to that. And then Jen lost her job doing pharma sales. And so we didn't have a lot to stick around for, so we kind of took off and tried to be with the family, reset, and figure out what we were going to do. And yeah, anyway, we came back from that, and you know, we were still running at the time, but we didn't really know what we were going to do. And I kind of had this thought, gut feeling that I really wanted to, I don't know why, I guess maybe it's kind of always been in the back of my mind, but just wanted to work on some real estate development that would try to help make housing more affordable for people that can't afford housing, and also just the construction costs of housing in California and Nevada is so high that even the average, you know, family is struggling to purchase homes and things like that. And so right when I came back from Alaska, that was kind of an interest of mine. And then Jen and I, you know, in order to pay the bills, thought, well, maybe we can, you know, kind of move into real estate. And so we've been doing that for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, since 2016. And it's been good financially, but it kind of led to like a downward spiral, I would say, of kind of our passions and our love for running, because it's such a challenging industry and a little bit kind of out of your control. And so we would be, you know, at a race or out on a long run, trying to train and get a call, and someone, you know, is having an emergency and there's a challenging escrow that's going on or something. And so it just seemed like slowly our running life got destroyed, and then our family life started to go downhill because we were working all hours of the day and the night. The kids are just sitting there watching TV while Jen and I are trying to handle our business, which was getting out of control. And then weekends, so basically for like 2.5 years, we worked 7 days a week straight, didn't take any days off. It got really crazy. So yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, we're kind of hitting this really nice downward spiral where everything we loved, you know, running, the mountains, our family, you know, simplicity was gone. Just like life was very depressing in a way, but we were making more money than we've ever made in our life. So it's like, you know, people think like, oh yeah, money's like central and money's important and money's kind of my God or whatever. And yeah, basically our life kind of suffered for it. And yeah, so I don't know. Then, I kind of, in a desperate effort to try to kind of claw back some of my former love of the mountains and running, signed up for the Wasatch 100 miler, which I had never done. But I thought, well, if I sign up for this race, maybe it'll kind of pull me back into the, you know, back into the running scene. And, I did sign up for it, but despite my best effort, I don't think I averaged more than 30 miles a week during my training. And I did do 3 kind of short 25 mile local races here to try to get my endurance up and running, but that was really the extent of it. You know, it was probably averaging 20 to 30 miles a week max. Needless to say, I showed up at Wasatch. It was the second hottest year on record for the race, and I had done 0 heat training, averaging 30 miles a week. And yeah, so I kind of was just, I don't know, I was just in a weird mindset, kind of depressed, a little bit bummed that I couldn't be back in the mountains and enjoying it. And even at that, like, Jen couldn't even join me out there because of work, and the kids couldn't join me. So I was by myself, no pacer, no crew. It was just a totally different experience than like what led me to ultra running, which is kind of like that community spirit and kind of that love that comes with the ultra running community. And, I was just kind of like isolated by myself and not ready for this race. And so anyway, I don't know, I kind of, you know, I guess out of desperation and whatever, kind of just decided, you know what, I don't have the physical ability to finish this race, but maybe by God's grace and some prayers, maybe I can get through it. And so, you know, I kind of just thought, well, I'm just going to start praying for different people every mile, and started with kind of like my family and my brother-in-law who passed away and some of these people. And next thing you know, like every mile I'm doing like, you know, praying for like 10 people, and, you know, and it's kind of like uplifting me a little bit just to think of all these people that are suffering or maybe to just need a little bit of extra help. And I hadn't prayed really in years very much, because I grew up Catholic, and Jen and I got married in the Catholic church. And so from like a mental standpoint, I was always kind of, you know, religious and Catholic and believed in Jesus, but I wasn't really practicing it very well at all, and really didn't have that as like a true kind of core of my existence. And so it was kind of, I guess, maybe out of desperation, maybe out of just feeling like that I'd kind of hit rock bottom and I didn't really know what else to do, I just started praying for a bunch of people. And needless to say, it didn't actually help me to get through the race. I ended up only making it to mile 68 before I timed out. after struggling in the heat, which was my first 100-mile DNF to date. I mean, I've had some other DNFs, but that was my first 100-mile DNF. And I wasn't upset about it, though. I was just, it just kind of felt like it was good to be out in the mountains and kind of reset. And so anyway, but I didn't think too much of this whole kind of transition, but kind of came away from that a little bit sad that my life had kind of downward spiraled so much that I couldn't even run or train or be a good dad or a good husband. And, you know, work was just taking every moment of my life. And so anyway, it's kind of, I don't even know how it all kind of came to be, but after that, you know, I was about to celebrate my 40th birthday and I was having this extreme sense of wanting to like declutter, cleanse, get back to basics. And I started kind of cleaning out my house and getting rid of a bunch of stuff because I didn't really know what else to do. And read that book by Marie Kondo, The Art of Tidying Up. I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. And it actually did kind of help me to, like, you know, say, okay, well, if I walk into a space, like, I want to feel joyful or feel like that everything kind of has a purpose. And so I just started getting rid of a bunch of stuff, probably like almost half my stuff. And I still have a long way to go on that. But anyway, I came to the book section and I started getting rid of all these books and that have had all this dust on them. And at first I started like just piling all my religious books and I was just going to get rid of them all. And then I was like, there's like something telling me like, yeah, I should probably just like read one or two of these because might help you out or whatever. And so I ended up picking up this one. It's called Purpose Driven Life. And I read it, and, you know, just over 40 days. And I don't know, something started happening and I kind of started to feel reinvigorated. And I had this realization that I've kind of gone through my whole life, like not like knowing about God and knowing about Jesus, and knowing about kind of our creation, but not really like having it in my heart. And, as soon as I kind of like let it into my heart and like actually started to say, hey, you know, I'm here. I need help. I need some guidance. I need a pacer in life. You know, things started to change. I started to get like happy. My eyes started to open up to all the negativity that had kind of like started swallowing me up. And I don't know. I went for a run one day and kind of just envisioned like I was running with Jesus. And the next thing you know, like I was like the happiest person on the planet. And I started changing my life. I mean, it doesn't seem that drastic, but we started taking every Sunday off. We lost clients the very first day we did that, you know, but we didn't care. We're just like, you know what? We just got to get our life back, even if we're losing money. So started every night, put the phone down, be with the kids. Every weekend, try to at least spend one day, like family day, no phones, no emails, just get back to that. And then slowly that allowed love of running to kind of come back a little bit. And Jen hadn't signed up for a race, and actually, Jen had done way less than I had. She hadn't raced in like 2 years or something like that, because she was even more like crushed by this whole thing. And so, yeah, she kind of came around a little slower, but she kind of saw how like the positivity of kind of getting back to our faith and kind of having that trust and that relationship with Jesus really like helped to make our life seem more meaningful and bright. And it also allowed me to like realize that the purpose of life is not to make money, and it's not to, you know, make films, and it's not to sell houses, and it's not to do anything really. It's just to like love other people, and, you know, all the things we do on the side, you know, like careers, it's just to support us and to fill our needs for food and shelter and that sort of thing. But it's not like the essence of our being, which I think I had taken it to be over many, many years. And I kind of had this sense like I had to prove something in order to be loved, or to, you know, have a place in the afterlife, or to, you know, I don't know, you know, I just kind of felt like I had to like make a mark in order to do something. And I kind of realized that's not true. It's just about, you know, your career is just about paying the bills so that you can be a good person and teach your family how to love and share that with people that need help, and, you know, homeless and people that need roofs over their heads. And so, yeah, then Jen and I both signed up for 100 milers again. She signed up for Cascade Crest in August, and I signed up for Wasatch again because I feel like I got to go back and try it again and just see if I can get it done. And the training's been going a lot better now that we kind of reprioritized our life and back into running and going back to church and, you know, just being with the kids and trying to, like, be better parents and raise them right. This is all very crazy to me because I've always kind of lived my life with like a understanding of our Creator and an understanding of God and Jesus and all this stuff, but not like really having it in my heart. And now that I have, it's like changed my whole outlook on life. And it sets my sights a lot further down the road. You know, like my sights have always been like on, you know, education and career and retirement, you know, and now it's like, what can I do to like just be the best person I can be and, you know, try to help other people too to on their path. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty good at explaining like stuff when it comes to filmmaking and things, but this whole experience is like kind of the first time I've ever publicly, you know, discussed my faith. And it's a little makes me a little nervous, you know, because I know that there's a lot of people that it upsets. And I was kind of one of those, you know, people that was just kind of like quiet about it because, you know, I just want to fit in and not be embarrassed, you know, about it. But I think it's important. And I think that we all kind of have to realize that our time on earth is really just short and that there is an afterlife. The things that we do now on earth do matter. And I want to help as many people as possible. And I know there's fans or, you know, people that like my films that'll hear this and they're going to, you know, not like me anymore, or, you know, kind of be against me, but I just have to talk about what is true to me and kind of, hopefully someone out there, it'll help. And, but yeah, I don't know. I think if we can all kind of look at Jesus as our pacer, on runs and just through life, it's really kind of the magic key. You know, I think in terms of running itself, running is very, you know, I think one could think of running as a selfish endeavor, and it probably can be if you have the motive of selfishness and it's all about competition. Or, I mean, competition's okay to a certain extent, but I think you can do anything really for the glory of God. And it can be, you know, running itself is kind of a penitential, sacrificial endeavor. And if you accept or embrace the suffering as God's will, then it can purify you. It can make you a better person. It can help you to fight temptation. It can help you to fight evil, you know, just by using that same approach and mentality to making yourself a better person. So I think in a way, like ultra runners and runners in general, it's the same mentality as trying to make yourself a better person and steer yourself away from kind of evil things, which sometimes can be challenging, you know, and get you out of bad habits. You know, there's been a lot of people that, you know, are drug addicts or, you know, lust addicts or different vices that, you know, running has pulled them out of. And I think when you look at it like a intentional suffering, it makes it interesting. So it's been cool to kind of think of it like that. So anyway, I know I'm kind of rambling right now, but
no, it's fine. I mean, and you obviously have a lot of thoughts on this, and it's definitely, to me, I've seen just from you talking right now how much it has impacted you since Wasatch and since your 40th birthday, you know, applying it to ultra running and everything else. And so I'm curious why you think 5 years ago, 10 years ago, the JB who was, like you were saying, maybe somebody who was quiet about their faith, maybe somebody who would even have not liked somebody who was so, you know, outspoken or honest about it, somebody who had, you know, religion and faith in the past in their life, but it just wasn't that big of a role compared to now, you know, why do you, and you kind of said it at rock bottom, but kind of explore a little bit more why you think that transition, that change, kind of that shift over kind of happened, because it is such a dramatic shift in a lot of senses that seems to have really shaped a lot of really all aspects of your life. And I'm curious how you think that evolved as you went along.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I got a little bit of, I think, kind of bad advice when I was a child. And I guess that's kind of the bad thing of being a cradle Catholic in a way, is that it's just kind of, you kind of take it for granted and maybe you don't quite ask the questions that need to be asked, whereas somebody maybe comes to the faith later in their life is coming to it on their own. But I think I kind of had some bad teaching along the way, and I can't remember who it was, but kind of some more universal approaches where it's like, okay, there's some sort of afterlife and there's a creator, but you don't really have to worry too much about it. Everyone goes to heaven. There's not, you don't really have to do anything. So you can just go on living your life, do whatever you want. And that was kind of, I think, the mentality I had, but I never actually read the Bible, which is crazy. You know, I'm like 4 years old and supposed to have this faith, and I've never like sat down and read the whole Bible, which I'm actually doing now. I'm like 60% of the way through it. But I think this whole transition came when I had the realization that the purpose of life was love. It wasn't doing things. It wasn't making movies to change the world. It wasn't helping. I mean, obviously helping homeless people and doing stuff like that is a result of love, but that's, you know, the point is love. And I kind of just had this realization that I've been looking at life in the wrong way. And as soon as I had that realization, I was like, wow, the problem is that I actually don't have a relationship with my faith. I only have, it's in my mind. It's like a intellectual faith. It's not a relationship. So as soon as I made that transition in my mind, it just was like, wow, it was almost like falling in love with my life again. It was like, wow, I'm falling in love with like my creator and my, you know, just like, I just took this veil off my eyes. I was like seeing everything new for the first time. I'd like see rain falling out of the sky. I was just like blown away. I was like, whoa, this is so amazing that, you know, just every bit of creation is just so fine tuned. And there's just like rain that just comes in and snow and gives us water and it grows these plants and these trees that, yeah, science knows how to take something that's already created and turn it into something new, but we can't create anything from scratch. So that kind of realization just really changed my focus on that. And then as soon as I kind of first had that realization that it's all about love, then kind of like more of like, well, if I've had it wrong this whole time, maybe I should look into it a little more. And then I started finding all this data to back up everything that I was feeling, and you know everything from, you know, creation science to near-death experiences of people that have seen heaven and seen hell and seen all sorts of amazing things, and just kind of realizing that we live in a temporary environment doesn't mean it's like the end of our existence. And so I guess I just realized that I had like kind of been minimizing how wonderful life is and how fine-tuned Earth is, and how if you took the entire length of the universe as a measurement and you moved the gravitational force of Earth by 1 inch over the entire distance of the universe, that we wouldn't exist. Like, that's how fine-tuned like our planet is. It's just like mind-blowing to me. And it's almost embarrassing to say I'm like 40 years old and I'm just figuring this out. I mean, it seems like something that I should have figured out when I was like 10, but I don't know. It's just like my eyes were open to this like brilliance of our existence. And you know what's interesting is that ultra running was really the closest I ever came to that feeling of awe. And I think that's why I loved it so much, because when I was just out in the mountains and running on these trails, I would get this like just really euphoric feeling just seeing the grandeur of these mountains and these canyons. And it maybe is why I like ultra running. And then also the other part of ultra running I liked was just the people, and the people, it was always just like this feeling of like relationships and love. And so I think that's why I feel like there is a parallel between ultra running and kind of like my faith, because I think it was like a way of me expressing it without really quite knowing, you know, that I was doing that. So I don't know if that makes sense at all, but it's just become a lot more real to me. And it's interesting because my horizon went from how much money am I going to make this year to how can I be like the best person I can be on this planet during the short time that I'm given here, in hopes that my soul will live on in a happy place. And you know, this will just be a short period of time, but I'm going to live each moment, love each moment, and do the best I can while I'm here, and focus on the important things instead of making money and trying to change the world, which is kind of like my, I guess, God at the time. So
well, at least from your description of it, it doesn't seem exactly in that kind of downward spiral before Wasatch. It doesn't seem to me that you were necessarily chasing money. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. It kind of just seems to me that you kind of got caught in a busy state of life, in kind of an overwhelming state of life that you hadn't expected, and you were kind of trying to just kind of catch up or ride the wave of how crazy it got, something that you just didn't expect to get so crazy. And then using Wasatch, and then the rest of the journey that has occurred, you know, since last year, was a way to kind of crawl back out of that. Am I off the mark, or do you think that?
Yeah, you know, I would say that I let greed creep in a bit, because I've been making films at least doing film production and advertising since high school, and I've never made a ton of money doing that. And this was the first time that I kind of realized, you know what, if I apply the same amount of effort that I do to filmmaking to something that has a higher return, I can do well. And so then there was a bit of a, well, if I can do this well, how much can I do? And Jen and I kind of both got sucked up into that, where we couldn't let any deal go, and we couldn't just put the phone down and say, all right, it's Thanksgiving Day, I'm not going to answer the phone. It was like, no, we can't lose this deal, we're going to answer the phone. And so I guess there was kind of a line that I crossed that I had never crossed in my life. And we made more money in, you know, that 2 year period than we'd ever made, you know, in a single year or whatever. And, but I don't care. It wasn't even worth it. You know, it was like, you know, looking back, the money didn't really do anything for us. It just stressed us out. So I don't know. Yeah, I think I did get a little lost. I definitely lost my role as like a good father and trying to guide my kids in the right way and giving them time, not just sitting them down on the couch in front of the TV while I'm sitting on the phone in the other room trying to make deals happen. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was a bit, it might not seem like it maybe to the normal business person, but for me, it was a different feeling. You know, there was like some desire, and especially when you're doing like this luxury real estate in Tahoe where you're looking at $10 million houses and you start to desire those things. You're like, oh yeah, one day I'd love to have like a lakefront house. You just start to kind of, your focus starts to get shifted onto material things, I guess. And I think we were getting a little bit into that where we were literally almost willing to like forego time with our kids because we were like, oh, let's buy a new house. And I started realizing just kind of during this transition period, I'm like, we're already stressed out. If we buy a new house, that's just going to be like that much more time away from the kids and that much more time away from running to afford this thing that doesn't really bring us any ultimate satisfaction. So yeah, I would say we definitely got caught up in some materialism that I had never really experienced before. You know, those are affecting our relationship too. Jen and my relationship, we were fighting a lot. The stress just adds distance on your relationship. And then Jen wasn't running anymore. She got dropped from Hoka. She was their first female athlete. She got dropped by them because she wasn't racing anymore, which she knew was going to happen, but just still the sting of like saying, you know what, I used to have this other life. I used to have these other priorities, and now it's all crumbling slowly, one piece at a time. I don't want to sound like depressed or a whiner because it was just kind of what we had to do, like you said, but I think we took it too far.
And that's so interesting to me because that very much is like the stereotype of a real estate person, somebody in that industry, of the person who, you know, who's always working, who always has a phone call going, who's always, you know, going at like 110%, always stressed. That's like in society, that is the stereotype of that industry, and you fell right into that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. We didn't realize it. Like, you know, it's funny because I said my goal was to get into real estate development to help, you know, like disenfranchised people. And I ended up selling $1 million lakefronts in Lake Tahoe. And
yeah.
So we definitely got like off track on that. But I don't think there really is a way. Like, real estate is actually a pretty challenging industry, especially residential real estate, because it's a lot of emotion. It's people's biggest purchase. There's a lot of things that can go wrong. There's a lot of issues. You know, I'm dealing with an issue right now where we spent 3 months on an escrow and about a week before close, it's going to all fall through. So, you know, it's, people just get emotional. They get angry. They need your advice at all hours of the day. And so it's kind of out of your control. You feel kind of like a puppet. And so though I think people have an image of real estate developers and people like on, you know, $1 million listing, just constantly having a phone and constantly making deals as a choice, I think it's not always a choice. It's just the way the industry works, and it's kind of brutal.
Well, I'm curious how, you know, you're in this downward spiral, you sign up for Wasatch, you get there to the start line, you're by yourself, you don't have that community really like you were talking about, and you start the race and you start, you know, to pray, which, you know, in a lot of senses is kind of like a mindfulness exercise. Maybe it helped you be more present on the run. Maybe it helped you be more present on the course. And then you DNF. And I'm curious, you know, how that, it seemed in your telling of it almost like a capstone to this downward spiral, this, you know, in a lot of senses, failure is in like not accomplishing what you set out to accomplish of DNFing at the 100, your first 100 DNF. And I'm curious how that kind of, you know, walking away from that, if that was like kind of some senses, like rock bottom for you, are you kind of where that came to kind of put you in a spiritual and emotional and mental place where you'd be open to realizing new things about your faith and about life and about the world, which, you know, came later?
Well, you know, I think part of the answer to the question that you just asked is also an additional answer to the previous question. And that was, you know, how did this thing spiral out of control? And I think part of it was this feeling that I am responsible to control my own destiny. And I have to, you know, it's like jumping out of a parachute and trying to flap your arms and save yourself, you know, whereas I just have to like, I kind of had to learn that I needed to put on the parachute. And Wasatch, in a way, was kind of still, it was half selfish and half selfless in a way. Like the praying was obviously kind of selfless to try to, you know, maybe improve some things for some other people. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, maybe if I do this, you know, I'll get some kind of divine help to get through something that I'm not maybe actually capable of doing physically. Obviously, the physical part of that didn't work out. But, you know, I think that just having that realization that I can't control things. I'm just a human. I can't make everything. I just realized I had to, like, let go a little bit. Because this big transition actually happened more towards my 40th birthday, which is, like, in December.
Okay.
And so that's several months later. And so it didn't really dawn on me that there was a correlation between kind of this, like, rebirth of my faith and Wasatch until afterwards. And I'm like, where did this all come from? And then I was like, you know what? Maybe it was just from all the praying I did at Wasatch. There was somebody up above that was like, you know what? You've been lost for too long. You need to get you back on the straight path. And it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen like a flash of lightning. It's going to happen over several months. And that's kind of how it happened. It's really hard to pinpoint, like, you know, like some people are like, oh, I had this near death experience. And next thing I know, I'm like starting up churches left and right. And I'm like, you know, trying to save as many people as I can. And mine was just this like slow simmer. And then it became like a full rolling boil. And I've just been kind of like in this like runner's high euphoric state, you know, kind of over my faith for the last like 5 months. Every day, it's like like the number one thing I think about, you know, I wake up first thing in the morning and read the Bible. I actually read the Bible on the treadmill right now. I walk 4 miles, read the Bible. Then afterwards, I'll run 5 or 6 miles, depending. You know, and then throughout the day, you know, I just really meditate on it, pray, really think about the blessings that I have and try to kind of get some direction and guidance. And then also kind of try to be okay with how my day's going and not try to force things, you know, because I realize, as you probably do, that we as humans tend to spend a lot of time and energy thinking about the past and in the future. I realize that if you take that out of your day, you can accomplish a lot more and you feel like you're getting the same amount done on one third of the effort because you're not spending all the time wishing you'd done something better yesterday and hoping that tomorrow will be better, if that makes sense.
No, definitely. Definitely.
And I realized that was a lot of the pain that Jen and I were feeling too, is, you know, because we're running a business on top of, you know, doing these transactions or whatever. And so whenever we weren't doing a transaction, we were like, oh man, what happened on that thing? I wish that would have went better. I wish that this day would have went better. I wish I would have got a run in. I wish that this client would have done this. And so we spent all this time talking about things that didn't go well or did go well, and then you spend additional time talking about how we're going to pay our bills next month. What escrows do we have coming? How are we going to market? Are we going to pay for this? Are we going to do that? You know, you like spend a lot of time stressing out about the future too. So slowly, I mean, you obviously have to do a little bit of planning and things like that. But I think that we as humans have a tendency to like spend too much energy thinking of the past and the future. Even when you're running too, like an ultra, sometimes when you're in a lot of pain and suffering, you literally have to think about the step that you're taking and not how far it is to the next aid station or how far it is to the finish, because it doubles the amount of energy that you need to think about all that. So yeah, that's been a big realization. Being present and kind of letting go a little bit and just saying, you know what, things are meant to be the way they're meant to be and I can't control them. I can plant the seeds for business opportunities. I can plant the seeds, you know, to try to get out and do a run. I can do the best I can to put my running clothes on. But if I don't get a run in, I can't beat myself up over it. Or if I don't close a deal because it's out of my control, I can't worry about that.
Yeah, that's something that I've been having to tell myself a lot in this, you know, the second year of college for me, and especially last year, my first year with the emotional and just like life roller coaster that it has been for me, of learning again to be present. Something that I did pretty well, I think, in high school in terms of having like a daily meditation practice and having a more or less consistent spirituality, and then moving into college, something that I kind of lost. And so I've been working, especially this quarter, in terms of trying to bring that back into my life on a day-to-day basis. And it's something that I think we all go through, kind of like ebbs and flows of it, where it's, you know, maybe we're super consistent with it at one point in our life, being present, of being, you know, connected to what's around us. And at other times we are extremely inconsistent with it and extremely away from it. And I think that recognizing that, like, it's not always going to be perfect, and it's not always, you're not always going to be right there in the moment, and there's going to be times in your life when you're not. At least for me, that recognizing that and saying, you know, that it's a, telling myself it's a process, has been quite useful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just out of curiosity, what does your meditation practice entail? And do you like any praying, or is it just kind of like just trying to like empty your mind sort of thing, or what?
Yeah, for me, it is an emptying of the mind type meditation, a mindfulness practice, much more in line with Buddhist, you know, ideals and teachings. Again, and like the prayer side of things is in line with kind of what I was just saying, in the sense of ebbs and flows of, there have been times in my life where I have had that very consistent, and there have been times in my life where I have not been consistent with that. And currently I'm in one of those not consistent times. But it is definitely something as well, you know, paired with more of a Buddhist type meditation, that I want to incorporate, because it, in the times when I have been consistent with it, it has been very useful. And so now when I'm not, I recognize that I'm kind of missing something in that arena. Yeah. And, you know, in the email that we were sharing, you know, in the emails that we were going back and forth about trying to schedule time and talk about what we were going to talk about today, you mentioned about, you know, come up with, you know, solid questions and maybe even counter arguments. And so this isn't necessarily a counter argument, but I'm just, you know, it's an observation of mine, at least for me. And I'm curious to see where you're at on that kind of sense of things. And so you mentioned how, you know, you being 40, kind of you're like surprised that you didn't realize what you have realized now, when you were 10 years old. And in my personal study, at least, of Christianity, in my experience with it, growing up in it, and now with a shifted perspective of it in terms of my relationship with it, one of my favorite authors, Paul Nitter, he wrote this book, Without Buddha, I Could Not Be a Christian. And it's an exploration of his journey of a pairing, I guess you can say, of Buddhism and Christianity. And one of the things that he talks about in that book is how when you're 10 years old, it's very easy and it's very common to have that sense, like you were saying, to be a cradle Catholic, which is a great way to put it, as you put it, where, you know, you have grown up in the church in some senses. And he talks about how at that age, in a lot of senses, your faith, your religion, your connection to God is based in the institutionalized religious side of things, where the parables that are in the Old Testament are viewed as fact and as concrete examples of reality, things that happened. And instead of looking at it as more of a teaching tool, in the sense that a lot of these things are more akin to fairy tales, not in the sense of them being fake, more in the sense of them being as teachers, what we find in the Bible. And so when you progress in your life and you come to, you know, 40 years old or 50 years old, your faith and your religion, your connection to God, he talks about how it turns a lot around for many people. It turns around to something of a personal faith instead of a, you know, connection to an institutionalized religion. And that is, at least from your story of it, it seems a lot like what has been occurring with you. And you start reading Marie Kondo and you start wanting to clean up your life, clean up living space. A lot of these things that happen at that age for a lot of people, it seems to be very in line with what has been occurring with you. But I'm just curious how your age has played into you turning back to God and turning back to a faith.
I do agree with you. You know, I think one of the biggest realizations that I had during this whole process is that it all starts with a relationship and with God and with Jesus. And I think that, yes, I was looking at it more as a religion. You know, it's like, okay, you got to go to church, you got to do your confessions and your prayers, and right, you got to get your sacraments and all this stuff. And I think that that comes second. You know, like once you have that relationship, you will just naturally be attracted to go do that stuff. Whereas the opposite, it would be like, for example, this last Christmas, Jen and I were trying to get the kids ready to go to church, and we're arguing, and we're trying to get everyone in the car, and we're racing out the door, and we're angry at each other on the way to church, and then we show up, and there's nowhere to sit, and everyone's standing up, and we're giving each other looks in the middle of church, and that's religion. That's like, okay, I got to go to church, so I'm going to go to church. You know, now I'm like, I can't wait for Sunday, and I want to take my kids, and I want them to experience that, and you know, when I'm running, I'm thinking about God, and I'm thinking about his creation, and got a whole new playlist of Christian hip hop music, which is kind of cool. And I don't know, you know, it's just like changed my whole perspective on this whole thing, where it's like the religion part of it is following the love of it, the true attachment, instead of the obligation that I guess was ingrained in me from youth, if that makes sense. It's interesting. This is kind of a little bit of a side note, I guess, on your comment, but, ultra running for me actually came from the Bible, which is kind of, it might sound weird, but I remember when I was a kid, literally some of the first thoughts I ever had of endurance walking or running or hiking was from the Bible, because I remember being in, you know, first grade or second grade and like hearing these stories about Jesus and his apostles like walking like all the way from Galilee to Jerusalem. And I mean, they walked hundreds and thousands of miles probably, you know, all over the place. And growing up in a society that has cars, and I used to walk 5 blocks to school from my house, and that seemed like epic, you know. So just this like idea of, you know, just these guys walking all over the place just to spread the word, I was like, that sounds crazy. Maybe one day I could go, you know, go over to Jerusalem and like walk in the footsteps of these guys and see how that would be to walk through the desert. It's funny how that thought like kind of stuck with me through, you know, high school, and then, you know, in college I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, and I remember like kind of having that like thought while I was doing that. I was like, wow, this is amazing, walking all the way across the country, and that this used to be what people did all the time. And then, you know, now, you know, hearing these stories and looking back at these guys walking, and obviously that was kind of just the normal thing that these guys did, but just the way that we've grown up in this modern society with cars and airplanes and all this stuff, it seems very out of the ordinary. But back then, I'm sure that was just pretty normal for people to be walking hundreds of miles all over the place. So anyway, that's, sorry, a bit of a side note there, but that was, you know, one observation, I guess, that kind of connected to ultra running from being a child.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and that actually segues us perfectly into what I'm curious about next is, and you've mentioned it even right there, and you've mentioned it throughout our conversation so far, of how what the interplay is between your faith and ultra running, and, you know, going out every day and running, what, you know, how ultra running shapes your faith and how your faith shapes your ultra running, you know, kind of that dynamic between the two. I'm curious to hear you talk more about that.
Like I was just saying, yeah, I think it really did have an impact on getting me going, you know, in the sport, in terms of the hiking the Pacific Crest Trail and how that led into ultra running. And my first film, The Runner, was about David Horton, and he's a very staunch Christian. And I found a deep connection with his faith and how he kind of took that into running and how well he used to do. And then his protege, Josh Cox, is also another big Christian runner. He's like a commentator now on like marathons and stuff, but he was part of like Ryan Hall's team, who's another big Christian. There's a connection between suffering for a purpose, using your talents, using your abilities to glorify the Creator, and then as a way to help you stay fit and become better at suffering, which, you know, if you think about the sacrifice that Jesus made for all of us, it was pure suffering, and, you know, just a little taste of suffering, I think, glorifies him in that regard. So I think there is definite connection between the two. And then obviously just being out in nature, being out in God's creation and just seeing things that a lot of people don't get to see and being kind of one with it. And I don't know, there's something powerful, you know, sometimes you'll be out running and you'll just get, you know, tingles all over just because it's so beautiful. And I think that's just like that feeling of connection. And then the third thing is just the whole point of life, which is love and showing love. And I think that ultra running, unlike a lot of other competitive sports, is really based in that. It's based in camaraderie. It's based in mutual support. even within the race, you know, the word competition means to strive together. It's just a community. It's got so many lovely things about it that just really speak to relationships and compassion and caring. And, you know, and I think as the sport's grown, it's, you know, obviously there's more competition and money creeping into it. I don't think that's necessarily bad, but I always hope that there's kind of that core, mutually supportive, you know, you can go and meet an ultra runner for the first time. You guys can go hang out, invite each other over for a beer, or go camp together or whatever. You guys are just like on the same understanding of mutual respect, I guess. So in those three ways, there is a lot of connection. I think that it can be the opposite effect when it starts taking away from your time with your friends and your family, and it becomes so selfish that hurts you, you know, and that can and did happen to us as well. There was times, you know, when Jen was, you know, when the sponsor dollars came in from Hoka and, you know, she was getting stipend and some travel money and shoes, and then it's like, okay, now the pressure's on and I have to perform. So now I'm spending all this time away from the kids and the family trying to get in these extra miles and extra hours. And I think there is a line that can be crossed for sure. And so I think it has to do a lot with mindset, how you approach it, you know, because it's funny how you can do the same activity and it can be very selfish, and then you can do the same thing with a different mindset, and it can be very pure and kind of a feeling of connection to the higher power and your fellow man, which is the point of life. So you can approach it in different ways.
I've done it both ways. Do you think that you find God more or closer to God when you are in a state of discomfort?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes it's selfish. It's like, I want a crutch to lean on, or I want someone to be the wind at my back, kind of helping me out. But, you know, it's funny because I was telling you about that pivotal, like, 3-mile run that I did back in December or January, that I'll call it my first run with Jesus. I'm envisioning that I'm actually, like, running with Jesus the whole time. And I just felt, like, super awesome the whole time. And so I, like, take this, like, selfie of myself, you know, as though I'm hanging out with Jesus or whatever. It was funny because I got back from that, and I don't know if you've ever used Google Photos, but it'll sometimes like match up older photos of you to compare older times that are kind of similar.
It
chose this photo from when I did the Tahoe Rim Trail unsupported FKT. I don't even know if I mentioned that, but in 2013, I went out and I broke the record on the Tahoe Rim Trail, 175 miles. I did it in 58 hours unsupported. Beat the previous record by 5 hours, and I had that record for 2 years, and then it got broke again. But it was funny because it compared a picture from that trip, and I didn't really think too much about it, but as soon as I saw that, I like actually did recognize that there was this sense during that whole entire FKT that I was with somebody and that I was like following somebody. And there's even a newspaper article where I relayed that experience. I said it was weird. Like, I don't know if I was kind of out of my mind, but it's like I felt like I was with another person. I felt like I was following somebody the whole time. Like, I wasn't alone out there for 58 hours straight. And so looking back at it, I was like, you know what? I wasn't alone there. And there was somebody there helping me and supporting me. And at the time, I was too kind of selfish to recognize it. But that's actually, I think, what was happening. So yeah, I do feel a connection. I think you sometimes have to accept it and recognize it in order to realize that it's happening. But I think that whether it's our guardian angels or, you know, Jesus or the higher power helping you get through challenging times, I think that that actually is what's happening.
Mm-hmm. So my dad, he has become in the past couple years a scholar. Oh, not almost. I mean, he very much is a scholar of Abrahamic religions, specifically Christianity. And so when I told him what you wanted to talk about today, he got very excited. And so he sent me a bunch of quotes from some books that have shaped his study. So I will admit that the quotes that I will read in the rest of our conversation bring up a few of these quotes. I have not read most of these books. I want to at some point, and I will. But this guy named Viktor Frankl, if you've ever heard of him, he wrote this book called Man's Search for Meaning. Mm-hmm. And he's a concentration camp survivor. He's a psychologist. And he started the book when he was in the concentration camps, and then he finished it afterwards. And the title is pretty self-explanatory of what the book is about. But he talks a lot about the book, especially coming from, you know, starting to write it in a concentration camp. He talks a lot about how suffering brings humans closer to God. And he has this quote, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." And that quote seems to tie in perfectly with what you were just saying, and what we've been talking about today of having a perspective that is based in presence and also based in the fact that suffering is not, or just discomfort, you know, in all training and life is not necessarily a terrible thing, that it's a tool and a teacher. And that in fact, it can help bring you into a faith and bring you into a recognition of what's around you. I'm just curious what you think of what he said, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like he's saying, you know, that, you know, our free will and our choice is really what we have and what we can control, which is essentially what I was saying about running and how you
right.
can, well, with anything really, it's really all you can control is your reaction to something or your perspective on something
right.
and your decision on how to take something. And so you can take something and you can make it selfish. You can take something, you can make it evil. You can take something, you can make it an act of penance. You can take something and make it joyful. It really is one of our strongest abilities is to have that free choice of how to respond to things. And I think that is a super powerful quote. And I've never read that book, but I have heard of it and I'd like to check it out.
Yeah, me too. I will eventually. Soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
Maybe this summer.
And I've been collecting a few quotes myself as I've been reading through the Bible of some things, if you don't mind me sharing a few.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Things.
Definitely.
I mean, Genesis 14:17, it says, "Go walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you." I think that's a nice call to explore and be with the creation and be out there. Paul says in Corinthians 9:24, "Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I run straight to the goal with purpose in every step. I do not fight or run like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body and make it a slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize." So I think that's nice. You run, you sacrifice your body, but it's for, you know, it's for a bigger cause. And then I don't know if you, did you hear this ultra runner? His name was Derek Jenkins that died recently.
No.
So there's this young guy, he's like 28. I think he's from Utah, and he ran this Paiute Meadows 50K right up here by Reno up in Susanville. And he won it last year. And he was this really kind of up and coming ultra runner. And, I guess he was just kind of doing peak bagging that all these guys are doing now, like the Kilian Jornet sort of deal. And I guess he fell on a run out in the Wasatch, and he lost his life in November. But he was, you know, a Christian. He had a quote on his website as well from Hebrews 12, which said, "Let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith." And so, you know, he lost his life, but he ran with purpose and kept his faith as he was running. Well, I came up with this little saying here recently, suffering purifies you if you accept it as God's will. I try to think about that when I'm running. It helps to embrace suffering when you kind of accept it as a greater purpose than just for selfishness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've liked that thought.
Yeah, I mean, definitely to me, when I'm out, the trails are a place of connecting to God, connecting to a higher power, a place of worship in a sense, as you were saying, because they are so powerful in many senses of being able to do something so simple of just putting one foot in front of the other. They can take you to a place in a place that is so raw. I think really strips away the layers and allows you to realize more about not only yourself, but about spirituality and about the world around you. So I'll run through some more quotes too that I think are important for this suffering, this discomfort as a teacher, as a tool, as a connector part of our discussion. So another author that my dad quite enjoys, who I also want to read at some point, he's a theologian. His name is Richard Rohr. Suffering of some sort seems to be the only thing strong enough to both destabilize and reveal our arrogance, our separateness, and our lack of compassion. I define suffering very simply as whenever you are not in control. Suffering is the most effective way whereby humans learn to trust, allow, and give up control.
That's interesting, because I think that ultrarunning is actually a little bit of a dichotomy to that regard, because it's suffering that is in your control, unlike suffering maybe famine or loss that I think the typical person may suffer. Running and ultrarunning in its own regard is a decision to suffer.
Right. Yeah, and I thought it was a good dynamic reading that with what we've been talking about, as you pointed out.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that it's almost like the next level of suffering is to choose to suffer. Because if you think about, Jesus knew that he was going to be killed and tortured and mutilated, and yet he had to decide to do it. And a lot of people are tortured and have, you know, horrible things happen to them, and I'm sure they don't decide for that to happen. But in a way, I think it gives you some level of additional mental strength to be able to decide to suffer and to get through it and to conquer that fear and that pain. It's really unique. It's a unique sport in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But it's one that I think is unique in its universality, that anybody could do it if they choose to. And the people who do, everybody I've talked to recognizes how powerful it is spiritually and really in all aspects of life, how much of an impact it has.
Yeah, for sure. It's literally the simplest sport you can do.
Right.
You know, there's not a simpler sport you can do. You don't need a ball. You much only need shoes, and that's about it. And so just in its simplicity, it is very connected to kind of our human nature to put one foot in front of another. And yeah, anyone can do it. And everyone's level of suffering is different. You know, obviously Ryan Hall can run a 204 marathon, and you know, I can't, but his level of suffering is different than mine. And maybe like relatively it's not, but to each person has their own level. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a strange sport, honestly.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, why would you want to go out and do that? And I guess that is kind of the mentality of the majority of people. They just look at you like you're crazy. Why would you want to suffer like that? Why would you want to stay up all night? Why would you want to put yourself through that? And I think there is kind of some deep connection that is found in that mentality. Why do we do it? There has to be a greater reason than just to say that you did. I mean, maybe for some people it's ego, but it just doesn't make sense that you would suffer all night long for no reason.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I don't know if you've ever heard of a guy named Eckhart Tolle. He's a...
Yeah. Okay. I've read two of his books, I think.
Yeah. Okay, great. I guess you can describe him as a mystic, I guess, for those who don't know who he is. But he wrote, quote, "By turning the light of awareness on our suffering, that suffering becomes a powerful gateway to presence." And he capitalized presence, which is interesting to me. But that's, I mean, that again, ties perfectly in with what we were saying earlier about mindfulness or being present in the world and on the run. And I think you mentioned it earlier that, yeah, when you're out there and you're running and it hurts, you kind of can't help but be there. And the more that you can be there, focusing on each step in a lot of ways, the more likely you will be able to complete the run, to finish the race, to get to that finish line, and to enjoy it more.
Right. And this just brought back a big memory for me of the Pacific Crest Trail. In suffering, we find rest and peace in the normal.
Right.
Meaning like, you know, if you've been out on the trail for, you're hiking the PCT and you're out there for days and days suffering and sleeping on the dirt, not even, you know, having a tent, or you're running an ultra, when you get back to that shower or that bed or just the office and you're sitting at your desk, it's just euphoric. Things that are very simple become magical, and it just gives you so much more appreciation for the basic necessities and the basic things of life that we just take for granted. The shower that we take every day, and the roof over our head, and the, you know, the warm meal that we eat. And when I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, I was living with 10 pounds of gear on my back, and I realized how little you actually need, but then in the counter of that, you appreciate all the things that we do have. And I think ultra running does make you realize that.
definitely. And in terms of journeys, the last quote that I had was by David Goggins. And these books I have read, obviously. I mean, they're incredible to me, of his writings. And he wrote, "My happiness is my reflection on the suffering during my journey, and knowing that I never quit, nor was I guided by anybody on this earth."
He's an animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what I was just saying.
Right.
When you look at the suffering, it makes the present moment more enjoyable and more happy because you're not suffering in a way. That's a great quote.
Yeah, and like you were saying, what you've been reading, what you've been picking up, and what you've been studying, the more that we can keep our mind open to learning new things. Because if you hadn't been open, then this journey wouldn't have started for you, you know, spiritually and mentally and emotionally. So I think that effort of being willing to take in new information is an important part of the process.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, I think kind of getting more humbled.
Right.
Realizing that I have been selfish, realizing that my focuses have been wrong, that I actually am not a very good person. Like, I think in my head, oh, I'm a good person. I'll make it to heaven, or I'll, relative to everyone else, I'm good. But just realizing, no one is good but God. You know, we all have failings. We all have sin. We all can't hold a candle to our Creator. And just getting back to humility and realizing that can't do it on our own. And thankful that I realized this before it was too late. And I've already made a lot of other changes in my life besides, you know, getting back to running and getting back to God. I have become a better person. I've gotten rid of a lot of kind of sins of lying and lust and just a bunch of things that we as humans, I think, are enticed with and are challenged with. I think just realizing that we're not as good as we think we are has helped me to humble myself. Hopefully I can stick with it and be a better person moving forward and change.
Right. Yeah. So I think kind of to start wrapping this up, I guess it's a big question. Well, it is, but I'm curious what spirituality is to you. You know, if you had to boil it down, what having a faith is to you, what does that mean? What is it to JB?
If you would have asked me a year ago, I would have just said believing in God and Jesus and going to church. That's what I would have said. But now I would say that the ultimate purpose of spirituality is to have a relationship with the higher power, and in that to allow it to change you and to make you a better person. That's what's happened to me. It started as being open to a relationship, just like meeting my wife. As soon as I fell in love, I started to change. You know, I stopped wanting to make $1 million at the sacrifice of my children. I stopped wanting to be away from my kids to make money, or stopped wanting to lust. Just realizing that stuff does matter, and it's all about integrity. And I don't know, you know, just opened my eyes to the fact that I have some changing to do, you know, and some. I need to be a better person and to be who I think I'm meant to be, and not letting those evil thoughts and desires, as hard as that is to say. No, I don't think I'm, by regular standards, probably considered a bad person, but by heavenly standards, yeah, I'm not a very good person, and I'm trying to get better. And then from that flows, hopefully, helping others to be the best they can be, whether that's helping them with their needs, food, shelter, you know, hopefully this podcast. Basically all the blessings of my life have started to come back because I've had this realization. And so running's coming back, and my time with my kids and my marriage, we aren't arguing anymore. And, you know, it's just like everything's getting better because of that foundation.
I'm curious if it's strictly to you and your relationship with it, your experience of it, specifically a Christian God, and in the senses of what that means in our society today, or, you know, at least to me, in my personal, I guess, belief and my own study, it's kind of best summed up in of my perspective by Richard Rohr. In his book, The Naked Now, he talks about how to look at God as a cosmic God, as a cosmic Christ, specifically talking about Jesus, not necessarily as strictly humanistic. And so he even asked the question, isn't it almost consulting to confine God to, you know, to just one religion, to be so sure that there's only one path? And that's kind of what I've found, at least in my personal spiritual journey, and why I've turned so much to the teachings of Buddhism and Taoism and even Hinduism and Judaism, and combining different aspects of all of those to build something that is more universal, looking at God as something that is just different interpretations in different places in the world and different times in history that all come together to share a message that is more similar than many religions like to imagine. Yeah. I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on that and what your perspective is on that.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm just touching the surface on apologetics and, you know, all the actual nuances of everything. So, you know, forgive my ignorance in all of this. But yeah, I would say that the spirituality that you just mentioned is kind of, I feel like, how I was envisioning it. I was like, it, you know, yeah, every religion's the same. God is just this greater power. And that was kind of how I was living my life, you know, kind of just respecting nature and respecting, obviously, nothing can't create the universe. So there has to be some creator. So feeling like, yeah, maybe the Muslim God and the Christian God and the Jewish God and all these things are the same. But I think besides like this moment where I realized that I was like having a true relationship with Jesus and it actually like changed me, that was huge for me. It was just like, wow, I actually changed because of this relationship. So that was one thing. But the other thing I realized is that for me, obviously the relationship to me is central. But as I started to ask these questions, you know, about the afterlife, I started doing some research and I started watching this seems a little weird, but I started watching YouTube videos from near-death experiences. And there was so many that were very similar. I mean, there's some that are a little different. And so I do understand that. But if you watch enough of them, you'll get this reoccurring pattern. And especially the ones where there's an experience of hell. It doesn't matter whether the person's an atheist, a Buddhist, a Muslim, a Satanist, every single one of them, if they have this type of experience, they all describe it in a very similar manner, and they all converted to Christianity afterwards. And I'm not trying to like, I'm personally not like trying to say that that's like the only answer, but that was a huge thing for me. One, this realization that there most definitely probably is an afterlife, and we do have some sort of decision on how we want to spend the afterlife. And that actually brought in a little bit of a healthy fear, I think, of our creator that I think I was lacking. And so then that kind of led to a little more research on the historical and scientific basis for Christianity that I think have reaffirmed my belief in that. And then one very simple thing I think that kind of opened up my eyes, that we all fall short of, and there really is no way for us to, as I said earlier, it's like jumping out of an airplane and trying to flap your arms. You're not going to be able to save yourself. You have to like put on a parachute. And there's obviously a ton of historical support of Christ and all the biblical stuff that it says about him. So, you know, it's not like, you know, we're just making some guy up out of thin air. Like the atheists like to say it's the spaghetti monster or whatever. Like, this guy actually lived and he actually died. And there's 500 people that saw him raised after his death. And usually if someone raises himself from the dead, I have a policy of kind of believing what they say. So, yeah, that's kind of where I guess I came to like more of a understanding of the importance of Christianity, I guess, versus if you look at all the other religions, Buddhism and, Hindu, I think they really focus on kind of more of a universal, multiple gods, not monotheistic approach. Judaism is also obviously very related to Christianity, just without Rabbi Jesus, who they do not believe is the savior. And then Muslim faith came out of early Judaism. You know, a lot of it's the same, but they have some beliefs that kind of went slightly different direction as well, that aren't super clear on how you can actually make yourself right before a perfect God. And I, you know, I'm not like an apologist. I don't have all the right answers, but I think to answer your question succinctly, my belief in that just came from my experience of that transformation from kind of a dark person to a person with light very quickly. And then just kind of that understanding that we're here and we all fall short of God's glory. And there's not very many people that could be righteous in God's eyes without some help. And that's where I really find that Christianity for me makes the most sense. Sorry for the long-winded answer. It's again, it's something I'm still trying to piece together myself. And the less logical part came first, and the more logical, like researching why, has kind of come after. But I'm still trying to figure all that out.
Right. Definitely. I wanted to see where you're at and just where your thought pattern was on everything. So it was interesting, definitely, to hear your explanation. So I have, as I call them, three motivationals, three little quick but important questions that I like to wrap the show up with. So the first one is quite simply, what's next for JB?
Immediately next, I'm doing the Genoa Peak Marathon here in the Reno area. And then I'm going to be doing White River 50 miler, which will be the first time I've done that, though. That's been on my list for 15 years, probably. And then, I don't know, maybe an adventure run in August, and then Wasatch 100 miler in September. So that's my ultra-running schedule. I'm going to keep reading the Bible every day. I'm going to try to get through that by August. I want to have it totally finished. Keep learning. Keep trying to build this relationship that I've established with Jesus, my pacer. And hopefully he can keep guiding me through day-to-day life as well as running, and just be the best person I can be. You know, this world's changing very rapidly, and I know there's a lot of antagonism kind of against Catholic Church, and there's always kind of bad people in good places. You don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. So that's kind of my goal. And then, yeah, just, you know, guide my children. You know, my parents put me into Catholic school, but I don't really feel like they spent enough time teaching me basics, like some of the stuff I'm learning now. I want to do that with my kids, and I have been. And then just my marriage, it's been blossoming ever since this transformation. You know, like, there's a whole new love and light, just like excitement to like go through this journey of change with my wife, Jen. So yeah, those are kind of the next things for me.
Sounds good. Sounds good. So what are your favorite books? Ones that have impacted you and shaped you?
I guess that's kind of evolved over the years. You know, when I was younger and getting ready to hike the Pacific Crest Trail, the book I read by Ray Jardine, which I forget the name of it. You know, it's changed. It used to be called the Pacific Crest Trail Hiker's Hand Guide, but it's really a book about, like, stripping down to the bare essentials and kind of going light, both in a like practical, like backpacking sense, but really the philosophy of living life in the light with a minimal perspective. So that was probably, you know, a very impactful book for me that kind of got me into long distance hiking and ultimately ultra running. You know, obviously, I guess I'll say Purpose Driven Life by what's his name, Rick Warren. You know, it's funny, my mom gave me that book when I was 22, which is right before I started ultra running, and I picked it up once or twice and kind of, you know, started reading a chapter here and there, but never read the whole thing. But that was the book that kind of tipped the scales, I'd say, just in the last few months, that really helped me to break down my faith into a very simple, concise way that allowed me to cross that line. So yeah, I mean, I can't deny that that was a super powerful book. And then, you know, to be honest with you, best-selling book of all time, Bible. I just started reading. I mean, it's funny, you know, it's like you've been going to church since I was a kid, and you hear all the stories every week when you go to church, but there's so much that you don't hear. It's interesting to kind of read through it and try to understand it both theologically and historically. But the more that you get into it, the more you realize, like, what a tapestry it is and how it's all interrelated and how there's so many, like, nuances and prophetic parables and just really cool. It's like it's got a life of its own. So I definitely recommend reading it.
Yeah, it's something that I haven't honestly explored all that much, and definitely something that I want to and should and need to going forward. So the last question is maybe the capstone question of today's conversation, seeing as how it's something that we've both touched on and explored more than once today. And it's, why do we run, JB? Why do we run?
You know, I think it evolves. I think when I first started, it was partially a challenge and partially social. And then it kind of went through a competitive phase where I wanted to, like, push myself from a 10-minute per mile runner to a 5-minute per mile runner. And I was able to do that, to treat running as a kind of a physical expression. But now, I think for me, it's a way to center myself, to meditate, to be in God's great creation, to suffer for a reason. to embrace it as something that has meaning beyond the actual physical act of running. Yeah, that's really what it's evolved to for me. So we're going to try that for a while and see what happens. As long as I can run, running will be a part of my life and a focusing, centering aspect that really brings us back to our essentials.
Thanks again for coming on the show today, JB. I had a blast chatting with you. I really enjoyed it. And I didn't expect this conversation, honestly. Like, it was really enjoyable. And I think it went in a lot of great directions. So thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks again for reaching out and making this happen. And usually much more succinct. But this is, like I said, this is hard for me to talk about. And I hope that this helps some people. I know some people are, this is going to turn them off. Even just hearing the word Jesus, like, repulses people. I pray for those people. And I love everybody. And I wish everybody the best. And I know I'll probably lose some friends over this. But yeah, I just feel like I had to do it. And I appreciate your time in being willing to take on this subject and reaching out to me and engaging it. So you're definitely a very blessed person. I appreciate your podcast. And I wish you the best and pray for you, all that you do, and keep spreading the good word.
Well, thanks, dude. And yeah, definitely. I mean, I love talking about spirituality and especially combining it with running. I mean, that's really kind of what this show has turned into in the years since I talked to you last. And that was that. Episode 177 of the Touching the Trail podcast with my guest, JB Benna, this week. If you want to find out more about what JB is up to, you can do so via the links in the show notes. And if you want to find out more about what Touching the Trail is up to, you can head on over to touchingthetrail.com, where you can read the writings, read the resources on meditation, on food, and on some recommended readings. And you can sign up for the Touching the Trail Weekly, the newsletter that I send out. You can also reach out to me via the contact page on the website if you ever have any questions or comments, or if you just want to talk. And you can follow us on social media at Touching the Trail on Instagram, at Touch the Trail on Twitter, and the Touching the Trail page on Facebook. If you haven't done so already, please make sure to subscribe to the show and share the show out with your friends and your family and your coworkers. And if you're loving the show every week, make sure to leave a review. If you want to help support the show, you can head on over to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. And as I have said many times before, we are built and based in the Buddhist concept of dana, of generosity, of giving. And so I cannot continue to grow and improve this tribe and this community and this show without your help. So please consider donating. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. And these are functional, affordable, unique, and handmade handheld deep tissue massage tools. And all those links are in the show notes, as always. Now, going forward this week, please remember to be open about absorbing new information and maybe learn to view spirituality as a vital tool, a vital part of your journey, if you haven't done so already. And if you have, if you view it that way already, then increase that view. Delve into your spirituality, into your faith, into your religion, in whatever form it comes. Delve into it this week. Explore it, as JB and I did in today's conversation. And as always, remember to go far, go further. And I will see you all next week on the Touching the Trail podcast. Thank you. The Touching the Trail podcast.